It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Wendy, here's something interesting. Almost a year ago, Eric Zorn wanted us to throw an adjective at the front of his name.
That's how long this has been going on?
It's been almost a year now. This because Steve Dale has the adjective noted pet expert. And
which
Eric
you gave
was,
him.
Thank you. Eric was a little jealous.
He was.
He was. So he said, I'm going to come up with an adjective every week. Well, now an adjective seems to have stuck. The word feisty, Eric, is the word that seems to be the one that describes you best. Is that
right? Steve Dale can be noted, and I can be feisty.
Nothing wrong
with
that.
And I'm feeling feisty, and I think I will continue to be feisty all the way through the November elections.
What's creating all this feist? Is it politics?
Oh, my goodness. What isn't happening these days? It's just such an amazing story and such a confounding story is what's going on. Right now, Republicans are trying again to mount some sort of a stop Trump effort.
Mm-hmm.
They're imploding.
Mm-hmm. Mitt Romney goes campaigning with Kasich in Ohio, and then he comes back to Utah, and he says he's going to vote for Ted Cruz. They're flailing right now. We've got a couple of interesting events this week. We have the Utah caucuses, which Trump is leading in. I mean, the polling in these caucuses is not all that exciting.
It's over. Trump's the guy.
But it looks as though Cruz is going to win. The question is, if he gets more than 50% of the vote in the Utah caucuses, then he gets all the delegates, which is important. Right now, it's a delegate contest. It always has been, but it really has come down to, can they keep Trump under, you know, what is it, 1,232?
The magic number.
The magic number that he's got to get to. Arizona right now, Trump's leading in all the polls, but everyone tells me that Cruz is better organized in Arizona. He's got a better get out the vote effort. So Arizona may be closer than we think, but Trump is supposed to win that. And then in a week and a half, we move on to Wisconsin. I think that's the date. I didn't bring my little GOP primary calendar with me, but in any case, Wisconsin's going to be a huge test because Governor Walker, if you remember, who years ago was running for president and mm-hmm. dropped out, he's going to be behind the stop Trump effort. Probably will put his lot in with Cruz.
Yeah,
and you know, Wisconsin's going to be an interesting state because it's not, you know, one of these states with a whole ton of evangelicals in it. So
I have a stupid question.
Yes,
that's really stupid.
That's fine.
Why did they let him go through the motions in the first place if there were doubts?
Well, they couldn't stop him, right? How could they have stopped him?
Well, wouldn't it have been easier to stop him then than now? Now it just looks terrible for
that party. Wendy's right. I mean, you're right, Bill. They couldn't have legally stopped him.
Right.
Anyone can run, but the question is, why didn't they organize? Why didn't they see this coming? And I guess,
why didn't they pick a candidate who was better than any of them?
Well, how many were there? Were 17, I think, 17 Republicans who were running?
Yeah.
And, of course, the question is, you know, why didn't they get out in front of this and try to discredit him earlier?
Yep.
And I think the answer is the same reason that most of us in the media didn't take Trump all that seriously. We're like, oh, this is amusing.
It'll come and go.
This TV star with his funny hair is going to come and run for... He visited our boardroom in June. And he had just announced, and there was that really ridiculous announcement where he comes down the escalator. Do you mm-hmm. remember the video of this? And then mm-hmm. there were also reports that he had to hire actors to come and cheer him on at his announcement because he couldn't get enough actual supporters into this lobby where he gave his announcement. And he had said this horrible thing about all the Mexican immigrants are rapists, or many of them are rapists, and NBC had disassociated themselves from him, and Telemundo, whoever it was parting company with him on the Miss Universe pageant.
There's right.
all kinds of stuff. So it was like, it looked like just a train wreck right from the start, and nobody really thought that they needed to organize behind him. And then, you know, the snowball started rolling down the hill and just started crushing people who decided they were going to try to stop him.
Wouldn't have had to ask Scott Baio more than once, because you saw that he's come out and support.
He wants
he talks
Trump.
Like I do.
The important Chachi.
Where Scott, have you been lately?
Scott Baio's plan is he hopes that Trump will be a little more pointed in his discussion of Hillary Clinton, that he'll be meaner to Hillary Clinton. That's what Chachi is saying.
Wants.
Yeah, that's what he wants. Let's say Trump doesn't reach that magic number of delegates and they have what they call a brokered convention,
right,
which is a flowery way of saying, uh-oh, we're in some serious trouble now.
It's basically an open convention because there aren't brokers anymore. There's no one who can really sit down and say, okay, here's what we're going to do.
Right.
It's going to be a free-for-all.
But the scenario is, and several people have hinted at this, is that the bigwigs of the Republican Party could say he doesn't have the magic number and he's not the guy we want anyway. And then Trump has said if that happens, you could expect some rioting. You can expect some problems, which is the Trump way of saying, I want you guys to do some horrible things. He just says, expect it. I'm
Isn't
not telling
that irresponsible?
It's extremely irresponsible.
I don't know if his delegates themselves are going to cause trouble in the convention hall in Cleveland, but certainly outside on the streets they might. But even bigger than that is, are they going to vote? Are they going to rebel at the ballot box?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to show up for the Republican candidate who gets picked? You know, in Kasich, John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, is staying in the race. He could, mathematically, he could win all the votes in all the rest of the primaries and caucuses. He would not have enough delegates
right.
to be nominated in the first ballot in the convention. He's staying in the race because what he's hoping, he'll be in third place almost for sure. Well, there's only three candidates left, and he's way behind Ted Cruz even. He's hoping to get to this convention and have it just turn into this free-for-all, and all the delegates are loosed from their obligations after the first ballot or second ballot, depending on the rules of the state. And then everyone's going to say, well, who are we going to nominate? My prediction is that if this happens, they'll go for Paul Ryan, the
right.
Speaker of the House, the Republican Wisconsin congressman,
right.
who was, if you remember, he was Mitt Romney's vice presidential candidate.
Does he look better now given the choices?
Way better, doesn't he?
He's very buff. Is that what you're talking about?
No, but I mean, you know, had
like
he been...
Like a more viable option?
Had he been in the mix to begin with, I don't know how well he would have done, but now it's like he's the savior.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, he's got conservative bona fides. He's
Speaker of the House looks good on a resume.
And it looks pretty good, yeah. And he's brainy. He's very nerdy. He's been up to see us at the Tribune too. And he's a geek almost. He's
right.
a policy wonk, and you kind of need that. I think if you're going to be running the government, you need to have a really good grasp of details, and he does have that. But I think he has been through a national campaign. He didn't win, but he's been, you know, vetted and examined by the media, so there's going to be no surprises. If you pull somebody, you know, off the floor who you don't know, who hasn't been through this, suddenly you are running. You're going to run a risk of having someone like a Sarah Palin. You just don't know what's going to come out.
Yeah.
So that could happen. But what we're seeing here is that this whole process is being exposed for the kind of strange contraption,
sure.
Rube Goldberg device that it is. That you know, we play it as journalists as though, oh, it's a state by state, and they vote and they roll up delegates and they win. But you know, even how the states ultimately pick the delegates who go, and where their loyalties are, all of that. It may come into play. It never has before. But if you remember, 4 years ago, Ron Paul,
yeah.
The dad, he would like get wiped out in these primaries and caucuses, and then his supporters would go to state conventions that followed up on these primaries, and they would engineer their way into getting, you know, sometimes 10, 15, 20 delegates out of these places where they won almost nothing because the rules are so strange. So all of a sudden we're going to realize that it's not quite this exercise in democracy that we think it is, that there's a sort of facade.
But that's the problem is to the average American, to the average voter who they go, wow, we've been following this thing for a year now and we went state by state and you guys made such a big
polls,
deal.
Yeah.
And then out of nowhere, some guys in a smoky room somewhere decided it's going to be Paul Ryan.
Yeah, rule,
what's the point?
Yeah, Rule 16 says that we can ignore these votes and we can take these delegates and they can say they're for Trump, but they can actually be for Cruz.
Yeah.
So it's going to, and that's going to really upset people.
Oh, yeah.
So
Eric Zorn is here. Is he feisty? Absolutely, he's feisty. You hear him. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. That's going to happen. Eric Zorn is here, Chicago Tribune columnist, talking about the events of the day. Let's talk a little bit about the Supreme Court justice pick, if you wouldn't mind, Eric. I know you got into some hot water over the weekend, didn't you?
You forgot my adjective. You just
the feisty Eric Zorn. The feisty Eric Zorn.
I was feeling pretty feisty about this pick. Last Wednesday, President Obama nominated Merrick Garland from Lincolnwood to be the next Supreme Court justice, and I thought it was a very cautious pick on his part, and it was deferring to this Republican obstructionism. And you know, as you know, the Republicans have said, we're not going to even give this guy a hearing. No matter who you nominate, we're not going to give you a hearing.
Which is so rude. Just at least go through the motions and then say no.
Well, I think the idea that Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, had was that he would get out in front of this so that it didn't look personal. That he said it. I mean, Scalia was still, you know, being trans. His body was still on the way to the morgue when McConnell came out and said, you know, there's no way that we're going to even give a hearing or a vote to anybody who Obama nominates because it's too close to the election. We want the next president to nominate this. So he insulated himself from the charge that it wasn't personal. So Obama's play in this was to nominate this guy Merrick Garland, who's a veteran DC Circuit judge with a moderate record. He's someone who seems to be, you know, sort of straight down the middle, calling the balls and strikes. He is, I think, on the left, maybe, but he could end up being like a David Souter, who was appointed by Republican president and then turned out to be kind of liberal. So you just don't know sometimes. And he's also 63,
mm-hmm.
which the tradition has been that you nominate a younger justice, someone maybe in his late 40s or his or her late 40s or early 50s, so that your stamp on the court is longer.
Mm-hmm.
He is the oldest Supreme Court nominee since the early 70s. He's older now than John Roberts, Chief Justice John Roberts, is right now.
Yeah.
So it looked like this was Obama was saying, well, okay, I'm going to
compromise a little.
Well, I'm going to give you this guy who is really kind of in the middle, kind of daring you to do this, to say no, to stop, block this nomination. And you know, what I think that he probably should have thrown a longer pass on this, that he should have gone with like Sri Srinivasan, the Indian born judge on the D.C. court, who is, I think, 13 years younger. I think he's like 50. Paul Watford, I think his name is, Watford, who's an African-American man out in the Ninth Circuit out in California, or this Ketanji Brown Jackson, African-American woman. I think that the kind of a pick reflects the diversity of the country, and it also is the kind of pick that would excite the Democratic base. By giving the Republicans this really moderate, mushy pick and letting them turn that pick away, he's giving the Republicans the deference of saying, like, okay, I take your point. You have the right to do this. I think he needed to fight them a lot harder on this. And it's something where I've had this feeling about Obama for a long time, which is when he gets right down to this hardcore negotiation with the Republicans, he tends to back off. He seems to think he can compromise with them, but they want to compromise. They're interested in compromise. And the example that always has stuck in my craw for years now was when he extended, there's Bush-era tax cuts, right? Remember that? They had the tax cuts. And there's the Democrat proposal was, okay, we will keep those tax cuts for everybody but the highest earners. We're going to, the highest earners are going to lose their tax break. And the Republicans said, no, we want the highest earners to get a tax break too.
Mm-hmm.
And this polled so well for Democrats. I mean, this is a really popular thing, like make the rich pay a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans just said, no, we're not going to do it. And Obama blinked, basically. He said, okay, well, they can have their tax cut too, thinking that he could negotiate with them. And they just rolled him on it. And I was so mad about that. And I feel like in this case that they've kind of rolled him again. They've let him nominate this guy, Merrick Garland. And my guess is that when we get close to the November election, if it looks like the Democrat is going to crush Donald Trump or Ted Cruz, that they'll go, okay, well, we'll take Merrick Garland. Rather than saying, because they don't want President Hillary Clinton or President Bernie Sanders because they're going to nominate somebody who's more liberal and younger.
Right.
They're going to have a bigger stamp on the court. And so I just think that he needed to make an opening gambit at least here that was stronger than that to try to, lay down his marker. This is who I would nominate if I had, the same prerogative that so many presidents have had before me.
And what about the train of thought of he is a lame duck president, even though he still has 8 months in office? Many people have said he's a lame duck president. We have no business listening to anybody under his consideration. Wait till the next president is in. That's ridiculous.
Well, the obvious argument is that he was elected for 4 years.
Yeah.
And that, he wasn't elected for 3 years.
Yeah.
So, but the counterpoint to that is I have to ask myself, and I think all of us who consider ourselves on the left on this have to ask themselves, would we be saying the same kind of thing if this were President Mitt Romney right now, and President Mitt Romney was trying to nominate an arch conservative judge? Would we be saying, "Hey, wait a minute, we're having an election here; it's coming up; it's it's too soon"?
Thanks to Joe Biden,
and
yes.
Certainly there are quotes. Wendy alludes to Joe Biden saying something very similar to this. It was a hypothetical back then in the early 90s, but he did say
the Biden rule.
He said, "Well, we shouldn't now that the campaign season has started, we shouldn't do this." So I think there's a lot of hypocrisy on both sides. And if I thought that the Republicans were saying, okay, we'll meet in the middle, we'll take this guy who's kind of a moderate, we don't know where he's going to go, but that is what the electorate said. So I wish that Obama had played a stronger hand,
sure,
and tried, sure, to tried to force the issue a little bit more. I think that would really excite the voters, and I think Democratic voters are going to need to be excited this fall. So
dazzle us,
please. Really quickly, since you brought up Mitch McConnell's name, because he doesn't get that many mentions on the show. I know he and Harry Reid are polar opposites on pretty much everything in the world, but they look exactly the same to me. I can't tell the difference between those two guys.
Well, Mitch McConnell's the one who looks more like a turtle, and Harry Reid's the guy who now wears sunglasses all the time because he had that exercise equipment accident. So that's how you know.
Every time I see one of them on in the news, I guess wrong every single time. I never know who's who.
You should remember the turtle and the sunglasses.
Thanks,
sunglasses
Mr. Guy. Feisty.
That's Feisty Eric Zorn. Read him in the Chicago Tribune.
And listen to me on the Mincing Rascals podcast with me, Kristen McQuarrie, John Williams, and
Steve Bertrand.
Oh, boy, that's
you
a great impression.
Name so well.
That's a great impression of Steve, Eric. All right, we'll talk to that same Steve Bertrand next. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.